Thank you for being here. This is about myths of evolution, and it's something that's quite annoyed me recently. I watch television programs, I've read books, and things are told us as facts about evolution. And when you look deeper, they're not facts, they're actually myths. And I want to whiz through quite a number of them, then we'll have a reading, and then we'll sum up. That's my plan. So, the subtitle to this is Please Don't Believe Everything You See on Television or everything that you read in a textbook. They're not always right. There's been many programmes about the 200th anniversary of the birth of Charles Darwin, or 150 years since he published his book. And these television programmes, even on our BBC One, have shown things that have been proven to be wrong many times in the past 50 or 100 years, yet they're still being put forward as a reason why evolution is correct. And I need to explain, there's two kinds of evolution really. There's little tiny changes, minor changes if you wish, within a species. And because scientists can see that, they believe there's such a thing as major change that create new species. And this kind of major change is what I'm saying isn't true. So, as I've said, and I've now broken it.
It'll evolve.
I did tell you that I didn't like computers, I work with them all the time. And I've done it again, look. It doesn't want to play. So evolution says that life appeared from nothing. It says that simple cells turned into living creatures. It still doesn't want to play. It tells us that birds, plants, animals, etc. all have a common ancestor. And that consciousness evolves somehow. I'm sorry, I don't agree with any of that, so I'm now going to go through some of these myths. So this is a minor change. You can take one kind of dog, a Cocker Spaniel I believe, you cross it with a poodle, and you get a completely new kind of dog, but it's still a dog. And that's the thing I want you to remember, and there's people in this room who've got one of these kinds of dogs, and there's somebody else in the room who's due to get one. So when you meet these two dogs, do remember this, that they are proof of minor change can happen, that you can create a different kind of dog. But you can't mix two dogs together and come up with a cat. And that's what this is about. Scientists tell us that major change happens, and that we can go from the simplest thing in the world, a single cell amoeba, to something slightly more complicated. Only slightly more complicated, obviously.
The one on the left is a Lasaraccio.
But seriously, this is what I'm trying to show you, that there isn't anything showing me that that's possible. I can't find any evidence in all the books I've been reading, and here's a few books just out of interest that I have been reading about this. I mean, this one's a classic. This one's called Richard Dawkins' The God Delusion. It's a famous book, and I think it's a brilliant book because it's so badly written. It's fantastic. That almost should be a reason to believe in God. This book is just appalling. This gentleman wrote letters to him, chapter by chapter, telling him why he was wrong. And that's a much better read. A lot of what I'm telling you tonight comes from this one, Icons of Evolution. And you can read it if you really want to, but this is a simplified version. We'll get to him later. But here's another one who enjoyed writing, The Naked Emperor, Darwinism Exposed. And this one's by Anthony Latham. Again, they're complicated books, but they are worth persevering with. It's taken months to get through some of them. But this is a simplified version of what I've found. And in none of them can I find a reason why we can get from a simple, single-cell creature to something like Dan. There's not one single example that I can find of a species turning into another. So let's move on. Still doesn't want to work, does it? So it doesn't happen. So there's the second myth. And before I get on to the second myth, we've already done one myth, and David's going to do me a favour. He's going to take a block of wood out of my tower every time I get rid of a myth. So he's already missed his opportunity once. Because I want you to imagine that's the facts that support evolution. And as we take some of the bricks out, the tower gets more wobbly. The other important thing to do if you're young, or if your parents are those who are young, is remember the different myths that I talk about. Because afterwards, I have a bribe. Here is the bribe. I believe there's about 11 of the younger ones amongst us, and fortunately there's enough there. But afterwards, I want, when we've completely finished the meeting, if you can come up and tell me a myth, I will swap it for an egg. But that's for the younger ones, so you might need your parents to listen and remember as well, because if somebody else beats you to that myth, then you won't get the prize. So the first one we've seen, it was about major change. See if you can remember that. The second one is an experiment. This is in all the biology textbooks that are around, and that is actually from a textbook. And apparently if you get certain things in this controlled environment and then you have electricity and make sparks, then you can create, under these very artificial conditions, some building blocks, as they call it, of life. It doesn't say create life. What it says is they can create some kind of acid, which is necessary for life. So I don't quite see how this proves that life can come from nothing unless you can see something I can't. Nothing makes these building blocks alive. And this gets more troublesome because that's what the scientists tell us they think the Earth was like at the time that this was happening. And it's a great big volcano, the whole of the Earth, is what they suggest. So you've got this nice controlled experiment that's meant to happen under controlled conditions when all this is going on around it. And even if you did manage to make life, what's going to live in that exactly? I don't understand. How could anything survive that? Even Science magazine says, and I love this, the early atmosphere looked nothing like the experiment. So it's a pointless experiment and shouldn't be in our textbooks. We could go on. Current air is 21% oxygen. That experiment needs you to have absolutely no oxygen in the world anywhere for it to happen. Because if you do have oxygen, you add the spark, you get an explosion. You don't get life. It's not a lot of use, is it? Another chap, this Robert Shapiro, I like what he said as well. We've reached a situation where a theory has been accepted as fact by some, and possible contrary evidence is shunted aside. And that's what they're doing. They're ignoring things they don't like. And he concluded that this is mythology rather than science. So I'm afraid, goodbye to that experiment. So we've now had major change and life from nothing. Or that experiment, however you wish to try and remember it, that those younger amongst you. The third one is the tree of life. This is the theory that we all branch out from different kinds of animals and we all come back to one common ancestor, which is what the picture is at the bottom. But it's been revised that many times I couldn't show you all the pictures. And they're still arguing about it now. Here's another version. I actually intended to call it the thicket of confusion rather than the tree of life. Because all of a sudden it's got loads and loads of roots. So life doesn't actually have to appear for this to work once. It has to happen 8 times from nothing in different ways and at different times. And the really wonderful thing is it apparently needs bacteria to evolve twice identically at different times in history just to make this particular thicket rather than tree of life work. I'm sorry, I can't see this, can you? So I'm going to say no to the third one, which was tree of life or tree of confusion. And just some comments from some scientists. He really was called Doolittle, and he said that scientists have failed to find the true tree. because the history of life cannot properly be represented as a tree. Well, that's an interesting thing. So we all come back from a common thing, but you can't make it look like a tree. That worries me. So he then says that new ideas, having final forms we cannot even guess, are called for. So we haven't got a clue, says the scientist, but we're sure we're right. I'm sorry. I can't cope with it. I shouldn't be this flippant, but it's true. The fourth one, the gradual evolution of species. We're told that we start from the single cell creature that magically appeared, and over time we get one or two more species and more and more and more, and that's that blue line on the graph, so that over time we end up with a lot more species till we get to the present day. And I've not put time on there on purpose, because everything I read tells me a different age for the Earth according to scientists, that there's no point in using any kind of timeline. But what they do agree with is that what actually happened is that all these species suddenly appeared at some point in the past. And then it's actually declined since, because we've lost things such as the dodo. So that's all I want to say about that one. That's the gradual evolution of species. Let's move on to number five. Scientists have this great idea about grouping us all together, that these are the groups that evolve together, one from another. So this is about, in this picture, our forearms, or our forelegs. So you've got a human hand, you've got the foreleg of a horse, you've got a wings of a bat, you've got a wing of a butterfly, and you've got the flipper of a dolphin. According to scientists, four of those are the same thing. Would anyone like to tell me the odd one out, please? Just any guess. There's no shame in guessing wrong. Because, sorry,
the hand.
The hand. Okay. Any other offers?
The horse.
Not the horse either.
The butterfly.
The butterfly. Whoever the winner was. That's the one.
No pressure.
But you'd think that the butterfly and the bat would be the same if they were grouping things together. But according to the scientists, it's not. And as far as I'm concerned, this isn't proof that these evolved from different things. These, to me, proof that a designer made them using a similar design for similar parts of different creatures when he made them. Some more on these groups. How's this for an analysis of some DNA? Cows are closer related to whales than horses. Hands up who believes that? I'm sorry, I can't. Here's another one. They tried another one with even more detail, and they decided that rabbits aren't rodents, but actually belong with monkeys. I can't get my head around it, so maybe you've seen a picture like that. I know it's flippant, but there is proper science beneath it all. So, that's the end of number five, and that was about groups for the young ones. We're on to number six, which is about embryos. Now, this is another one that I find in textbooks. And a chap called Ernest Haeckel drew embryos. And if you can't read it, it doesn't matter, but from the left it goes fish, salamander, turtle, chicken, rabbit and human. And apparently at all one point, according to this gentleman, we all look the same, therefore we must have come from the same thing, and that's an obvious proof of evolution to him. But you've got to notice the words, as drawn by. This gentleman drew them. And they're in the textbooks, as he drew them. Here's the real photos at the same time. They don't look anywhere near as similar, do they? So, I'm sorry, I can't really accept that either. So, I'm going to move on from that. So, that was number six, embryos. Let's move on to number seven, shall we? Peppered moths. This is another classic. This took 5 minutes in a one-hour programme about Darwin about 3 months ago on the television on BBC One. And it's a great proof, because there's two kinds of moths, the light one and the dark-coloured one. And they live in trees. And apparently, during the Industrial Revolution, the trees got a bit darker on the trunks, so the dark ones flourished, and the light ones, not died out, but decreased in number. And then when the Clean Air Act came in, the black ones, the dark ones, they diminished back to the original level, and the light-coloured ones flourished again. And that's apparently proof of evolution. There's a few problems with this story that I'm telling you. One, it didn't happen near industrial areas, it happened in the countryside. So I don't think it's really to do with pollution. But the best thing of all is you've got some nice pictures there proving it, and you can see the difference on the two, can't you? About how well camouflaged it is. So you'd expect the camouflage one to do really well because the birds won't be able to find it and kill it and eat it. The problem is these moths are not, it's not where they live. They don't live on tree trunks. They live underneath the branches on the leaves where the birds can't see them anyway. This picture is a fake. It's a picture of some dead moths stuck to some bark that's the correct colour. They don't live there, they don't feed there, they don't have, their habitat is not the tree trunk, it's underneath the leaves. So the whole thing's just wrong. And it was on for 5 minutes.
You don't fly during the day, has it?
Well, there's that as well. But I can't cope with it as things that BBC One are showing us. So that's the end of the peppered moth as far as I'm concerned. It doesn't happen like that. Those pictures are fakes. Darwin's finches. This one's a classic. You might know that Darwin went on a voyage and he went to certain islands and he saw some finches there and he collected some samples, and apparently he worked out evolution from this because they found all these different finches with different sizes and thickness of the beak. I'm sorry, he didn't. He went there, he collected some of these finches, but he didn't work it out. Somebody else did. A chap called John Gould. He worked out and actually showed Darwin a bit about it. And then a chap called David Lack, many, many, many years later, wrote a book called Darwin's Finches, and that's why they're called Darwin's Finches, because he named them that way. And it was his study that we now know about, which is great and fine, and yes, there are different kinds of finches with different kinds of beak size and so on. But they're saying that they all evolved. This is a study done by a chap called Peter Grant and his wife, whose name I've forgotten. And for 20 or 30 years they've studied these islands. And what you've got in pink is what they've studied and discovered is the average beak size of these finches on a given island over this long time. And it goes up and down, up and down, up and down. And it depends on what kind of food's available and what kind of seeds are available, that the ones with the stronger beaks or the smaller beaks that can get in and get to the different kinds of seeds, they do better or worse. But what they show is that the thing goes up and down, because what's available goes up and down. If evolution was happening, they'd all turn into the massive beak version, and that would be the end of it. And the blue line would be what they'd expect to happen, but it didn't happen. And I've actually labelled those wrong, haven't I? I'm sorry about that. Ignore the label. The blue line is what they expected, the pink is what actually happened. So that's the end of number 8. That's Mr. Darwin and his finches. So we're back to Darren. And this is about DNA is number 9. And it's about how complicated Darren is and we are. There's different ways of measuring when you look at the DNA. So these are the number of distinct genes that you can find in a Darren or one of us. 30,000. It's fairly complicated. So what would you think we can find in Einstein? How many? Higher, lower, the same? What do you think?
Lower.
The same is the correct answer. Darren has the same number of genes as Mr. Einstein, and so do we. But from there, where do we go? Higher or lower for a worm?
Lower.
Lower. Okay, that's correct. Very good. So let's try another one, shall we? Shall we go higher or lower to a fruit fly? lower. Okay? That's right as well. So I want to now go to something different. A bowl of rice. So we're looking at rice. Is that higher or lower than a darren? In being complex. Lower is an obvious answer, but unfortunately in this case it's wrong. 40,000. Rice is more complicated than all of us from this point of view. And the really good one is the single cell creature. There's different kinds of these, I admit. Some are simpler, some aren't. But the founder version with 100,000 different genes in it. So science tells us that we're going to evolve and get better, and in theory we've actually gone from 100,000 down to 30,000 if we believe what science tells us. It doesn't quite make sense to me. So we've actually lost DNA information if we've come from this one ancestor. It doesn't make sense, I'm sorry. So more about this, number 9. We've got Darren again. And this time we'll look at the number of chromosomes that you can find. So, I want to also compare it with that. And that's a deer. And there's the answers. So a human has the same number of chromosomes as that deer, but less than a chimpanzee. And I'm told, according to scientists, that we evolved from chimpanzees. I don't understand how we could have done, because we've lost chromosomes. And most people, all scientists will tell you, when you start losing chromosomes and messing with DNA and doing their experiments, it's never a good thing. As far as I'm concerned, we were created with those 46, and that's what we've always had, and that's how many we'll always have. You can't change the number of chromosomes sensibly. So, there you go. Another look at DNA. Let's move on again. Number 10. So, that's me just saying, according to that, Darren's closer related to a deer than he is to a chimpanzee, according to the number of chromosomes. And I've got a ridiculous story about that, I'm just trying to find it. Do you realise, if we carried on, before I get to this, 75% we have in common with something called a worm. We've got 75% actually in common with a worm. We can be regarded as 60% chicken. We can be regarded as 80%, 88% rat. So when you see these other numbers where it says human versus chimpanzee at 99.9, which they revised to 99, and then they revised it to 98.5, and they revised it again to 95% chimpanzee, I wouldn't get too concerned. And I've seen one study that puts it at 48% chimpanzee, which means we're more closely related to a worm, a rat or a chicken, if that one's right. I can't accept it. And the best one I've come across, and I have to tell you about this, they got a dinosaur and they managed to get some DNA from it. And they discovered it was identical to a turkey. Not similar, identical 100%. And in the end, the story said, well, what do you think's happened? And this was published in Science magazine. The reply was, maybe someone dropped a turkey sandwich in the dig, or there was lab contamination. But they presented this DNA as from a dinosaur. Let's move on to number 10, because we're nearly there for this part. The fruit fly. This one's a class act. 80 years scientists have been playing with the poor fruit fly, trying to prove that we all come from a common ancestor as a result of good accidents. Anyone who's crashed a car will know that any accident is never a good one. It always involves damage. It never makes your car better. You don't crash into someone else's car and your Mini turns into a Rolls Royce. It doesn't happen. Let's move on from that. But they've simulated, as far as they're concerned, 100 million years of evolution is what they'll tell you. And they've not managed to make anything other than a fruit fly. No new creatures, no new species. They've failed. So there you go. This is another quote from a scientist. After 80 years and millions of generations of fruit flies subjected to x-rays, chemicals to cause mutations, all they've been able to produce is more of the same. Fruit flies. No new creatures. And this is a poor fruit fly, this one on the bottom. They've found a way of messing with it to give it an extra set of wings. And you've got to feel sorry for this creature. Because it's not successful, it's not progression, it's cruel and nasty because that thing can't fly. So they've turned a fly into what can only be called a walk. And that's meant to be a proof of evolution, and again, it's in textbooks. So my last one, so those who've been writing these down or trying to remember, we're on the last one, we're on number 11. And this is Anthony Flew. Others have talked about him. He's one of the biggest atheists this country's ever seen. He's written tons of books on the subject about why there's no God. Aged about late 70s, early 80s, he's changed his mind. This is his latest book, and he's changed it from "there is no God" to "there is a God." And that's his point of view from philosophy. He's a professor of philosophy. He's been doing that for more than 20 years at various universities. And he says that there is some kind of design. He's not sure which, he's not gone as far as saying about a religion, but he believes there's a divine controller, a divine creator, if you like. There's something controlling this world. And one of his biggest issues is the fact that we think we have a sense of self-being, that we actually are aware of ourselves and that we're not machines. But that's what he says in this rather difficult to read book. So, we've talked about what evolution says, hopefully. Life came from nothing. I hope I've shown you that's not the case. That simple cells can turn into big complicated creatures. Again, I don't think it can. That consciousness evolved. And that major changes happened to create us all from a common ancestor. But again, from that thicket of confusion, I can't see that that's true. So I'd like to say that that's wrong. A final thing that I'm going to talk to you about. This is a terrible quote, but it is a quote from this Charles Smith, and I'm going to read it to you, because this is just how stupid I feel evolution is, as a full theory. And it says, "In the beginning was matter, which begat the amoeba, the single-cell creature, which begat the worm, which begat the fish, which begat the amphibian, which begat the reptile, which begat the lower man, which begat the lemur, which begat the monkey, which begat man, and they say, who imagined God?" That is terrible words, and I think that that's far harder to believe than the very simple thing to believe. 3,500 years earlier was written, "In the beginning God created the heavens and the earth." It's there in Genesis chapter 1 verse 1. And of the two, if you want to just believe something, you can't tell me the first is simpler to believe than the second, accepting that there is a divine mind that controls this earth. Please don't worry about reading all those other books. Read this one, the Bible. This is the one that will tell you the truth, as I intend to try and show. There's a picture there. It's a great photograph, isn't it? It isn't a photograph. That's a print of a painting. The artist that did this is him, Carl Brandes. The guy is an absolute genius at painting. He painted that picture. There's no way that I can convince you that I went to walk in the wilds of Scotland and just came over Brown Hill and found that picture. Does one of you believe that I did? You're not going to ever believe that I just found it in a place that man's never been before. I'm sorry, you all accept the fact that we need a man who could have painted it. We need someone who made the glass for the frame. We need someone who cut the wood to the right shape and put it all together for me. There's a designer involved in making that picture. The watch.
The old-fashioned kind of watch, with lots of cogs and things. If you went to walk and found one of those lying on the floor, would you believe that it appeared there by itself? Or would you believe that some fortunate person had dropped it and lost it? I'm sure you're going to agree with me, there's no way that you think that it appeared by itself. But that's what we need to believe if we believe that life came from nothing. Because this watch is a lot simpler than a single cell creature. The watch has a creator. Richard Dawkins, the chap that I talked about with the terrible book, he believes in a blind watchmaker. He thinks you can make that blind. It's known to us as chance, and I'm sorry, I don't care how many times you put all those cogs together, you would never make that watch work. It's like asking David to put these back in the box and shake them up until he makes me that tower again. There's no chance. And again, these things are much simpler than the single-celled creature that's supposed to have appeared, as far as I'm concerned, by magic. God was very careful in Genesis to state, if we read chapter 1, that animals were created after his kind, or his species. Scientists have proved God right. It took them 80 years and millions of generations of fruit flies, but they proved it. They never made a fruit fly into anything other than a fruit fly. And the other really classic one is they made some fruit flies without eyes. They let them carry on breeding, and a few generations later, their DNA fixed themselves and their eyes came back. They couldn't even damage them and keep them damaged. So we get to the bit that the youngsters might be interested in, the reason why I've got Kinder Eggs for afterwards, is those Kinder Eggs contain plastic toys, and that's the way they're designed by the manufacturer. So anyone who's got young children, please bear in mind the fact that there are small plastic toys inside. But that's the way they're designed, and that's what you're going to get. And as far as I'm concerned, that's why dogs have puppies, they don't have kittens. You get what you should get, you don't suddenly change species. You're not going to find gold bars in there or anything else. Let's move on. You can look this up, but there's no need, it's there in front of you. For the invisible things of him, that's God, from the creation of the world are clearly seen, being understood by the things that are made, that's us, even his eternal power and Godhead, such that they, that's us, are without excuse. Because that when they knew God, they glorified him not as God, neither were thankful, but became vain in their imagination, and their foolish heart was darkened. Professing themselves to be wise, they became fools. And I'm sorry, that's what I think some of our most learned people are. They're looking for excuses not to believe in God, to remove the responsibility from themselves for their lives. God saves. I will open the rivers in high places, and the fountains in the midst of valleys. I will make the wilderness a pool of water, and the dry springs of water. I will plant the wilderness to see them, that they may see and know and consider and understand together that the hand of the Lord hath done this and the Holy One of Israel hath created it. Every time I look at a picture like that and see an animal like that, I see creation. I don't see evolution. I don't see how that lion could have come about by chance. It's a fantastic creature. It's a magnificent creature. God says, I have made the earth and created man upon it. I, even my hands, have stretched out the heavens, and all their hosts have I commanded. And I can't disagree with that. For thus saith the Lord that created the heavens, God himself that formed the earth and made it. He hath established it. He created it not in vain. He formed it to be inhabited. I am the Lord, and there is none else. So, I'll leave you the alternative view. Because as far as I'm concerned, anyone who says there isn't a God is a fool. Thank you.